are swift, rocks are ancient.
Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to play a bigger game and make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Today, I get to welcome Barb Chambliss to the show. Barb is a psychotherapist and mediator. She recently released a book, Women Peacemakers, and her purpose is to wake up the conscious peacemaker in as many people as possible. She directed the Volunteer Center for Conflict Resolution in Aspen and has taught mediation to over 500 children and adults in rural Colorado schools. She also facilitates restorative justice circles, which we'll talk about today. Thanks so much for having this conversation with me today, Barb.
Oh, it is so nice to be able to talk this over with you.
Well, yeah. So as a way of introducing restorative justice to those who are new to it, I want to start by hearing a little bit about how you got interested in restorative justice and why you find it so valuable.
Well, my own personal trip into this actually began, I will say, with mediation, which is a cousin, a close cousin, but has some very distinct differences. But at the time when I got acquainted with mediation, it was about the only thing around for my purposes. And my husband and I were getting a divorce. And we had started with lawyers, and it became very expensive. And all of a sudden, we didn't like each other anymore. And I was mountain climbing with someone who ran a mediation school. And she said, have you ever thought of this? And I said, no, I meditate. She said, no, it's not meditation, it's mediation. And the process of going through that actually created a bond between my husband and me that's still going. So 40 years later,
wow.
We're still very good friends. And it had a lot to do with the conversation and being able to hear perspectives of each other that we either had been too shy, too unequipped, or too upset to be able to share. And it just brought us to peace with our decision with each other. It was like we collaborated. We made it together. And that was 40 years ago. And then 30 years ago, I first heard about restorative justice. And it felt like the same thing at a community level. Like, read again the purpose of this program, which is the mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, that's what The Inner Game is, you know, referring to, is how we nurture our own integrity and wholeness.
Yeah, and I think what I got clued into by the concept of restorative justice is the mind, body, spirit of the community. It was more than just individuals doing it, but it was like, because I've done different kinds of work with whole communities. Like when I first came to Carbondale, one of the very first things I was asked to do was deal with the situation at Penny Hot Springs. And it was a one family versus 40 people in this town. And it called for a dialogue more than a outcomes mediation and things like that. There were outcomes that happened from that, but the dialogue is what set the stage for having private owners on one side of the river and a community on the other side, each other, that were both caring about what the other people needed. And so I went like, this is kind of magic.
Mm.
And then I got the training to be a restorative justice facilitator and trained again every 2 years in different facets of it, and a lot of work with youth, which is youth zone here, is following a certain model of that. And one of the most poignant trainings I ever took was from a fellow in Minnesota teaching us how to facilitate a restorative justice conversation between people that were on death row and the families of the people they had killed.
Wow.
So, and at that we were working with people that were from Northern Ireland dealing with it, and Kosovo. So it had an international.
And what were the gifts that came out of that?
Out of that training?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And out of the process between those groups of people?
Well, first of all, it took 3 years to bring one of those cases to fruition. So you were building hope. You were building, on one side, there was somebody who was sort of desperate. But they knew their life was going to end. And there was a family that had a lot of power to either forgive or not forgive, things like that. And it balanced the power between those two entities. And they came to the table, and that's why it took 3 years to work the case. They came to the table as equal humans.
Mm.
It actually brings me to tears.
Right.
To think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it teaches that everybody is to be respected.
Right.
Not by instructing them, but by going like, wow, I had no idea. So the conversations are very respectful, respect building, I would say.
Yeah, I was thinking about how so many issues tend to polarize us. You know, you're either with us or against us, and there's no room for gray area. And I wonder, it sounds like restorative justice processes can really help to mend that divisiveness and find your way into those contradictory and complex areas that we inhabit as human beings.
Yeah, I think one thing that shows up in restorative justice conversations is how similar we are.
Mm.
And it takes the wind out of the sails of rightness and wrongness.
Yeah.
And goes like, oh, yeah, perspectives. That's what it is. It's different perspectives.
Putting yourself in someone else's shoes.
Yes.
Looking through a different set of filters.
What if that had been me?
Yeah.
And I've had people ask in restorative justice meetings, turn to the people there and go like, well, what would you have done?
Right.
And it's like they're sitting there with a community of people who can answer that question and say, maybe I would have done just exactly what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right.
So.
And how can I know unless I've been through the traumas and the enculturation and the wide range of experiences,
right,
that somebody else brings to the table?
And, you know, the judicial system actually calls it a crime against the state. And one of their goals is to take a perpetrator or a crime committer and find out if they are right or wrong. And pursue that. You know who gets lost in this is the victim.
Right.
Sometimes they're never allowed to speak.
Mm.
And when they are allowed to speak, what everybody in the room begins to realize is there's victims and offenders that are trading places all the time.
Right.
I mean, nobody is just an offender.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In any conversation.
Yeah.
You know, we see that happening.
Yeah. And it's kind of fascinating, Gwen, as if you've done a variety of these or a number of these, you can, as the facilitator, can feel this magic thing begin to happen in the room. And you go like, I can sit back. You can't sit back, really, but you go like, all of a sudden, this is bigger than me. What's beginning to happen in this room? And it's really healing. That's the power of restore in restorative justice.
What do you think that bigger thing is that emerges?
I think it's the premise that we're all human.
Mm.
You know, boogers and all.
Yeah.
And this started, actually, one of the earliest people that started this were the Maoris in Australia and New Zealand. And they would just, if something went wrong, they would just circle up and they'd stay for days. Talking about what happened, where harms happened, what would we do better, how much we love this person. We don't identify them as a bad person or bad, you know. And by the time they're done, they all go eat. Worms, maybe, or whatever their diet is for the day. But it's it takes the sting out of competition, out of you versus me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big us, presenter.
It's funny you say that. I was thinking earlier today about a conversation I had with one of my guests who she was a climate strategy specialist and would work with municipalities and landowners and foundations and, you know, trying to further sometimes, you know, really complex issues. And I asked her how she learned to create safety and a sense of collaboration mm-hmm. in the groups that she facilitated. And she said she'd gone to a Waldorf school from kindergarten through high school. Mm-hmm. And what she remembers is sitting in a lot of circles, working out issues. Mm-hmm. And man, I don't think many of us get that kind of training in our culture.
It's true. I mean, first of all, the circle is a huge
yes.
change from any other configuration.
Right.
And safety is the goal. I mean, a lot of my training was with restorative justice through the Waldorf School, a wonderful woman from Oregon. But it is about... You can't expect anything magic to happen if there's no safety. People have to, but that means safety to come. Mm-hmm. That means safety to speak. That means safety to accept accountability for what you did, because that's not the end of it. Because you're going like, well, yep, that happened. What do I want to do? What are the needs? What do I need to be a part of the community again? Walk with my head up. What does the community need to accept me? And that's one of the cool things about restorative justice, is it not only brings in the voice of the victims or the harmed person, it brings in the community, because when a crime happens in a community, it tears the fabric of the community.
Yeah.
And so the community can...
And not just a crime, right? It can be... you know, a conversation, a misstep.
A misunderstanding.
A misunderstanding.
Or a reaction instead of an action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And who doesn't do that?
And we often don't attend to those rips. And when that happens, they inevitably, it weakens the social fabric. And the other tears appear.
And makes it vulnerable.
Yes.
For further tears. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the book you mentioned at the beginning is Women Peacemakers, What We Can Learn From Them. Someone said to me, what's the difference between protesting and women and the peacemaking that your women do? And I said, you know what? It takes a village to make peace. Restorative justice is a piece of it. And there are even applications of restorative justice, different kinds. But so does protesting, so does lawmaking, so does mediation, so does restorative conversations. There's no one magic bullet here, but if you have the concept of restoring the fabric behind whatever you do, it's a good guidance piece, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to take a quick break here. And say, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today I'm talking with Barb Chambliss about restorative justice and how it can help communities to heal and build resilience. And man, that's something, you know, I work with a lot, trying to figure out how we personally, as groups, as organizations, as municipalities, build resilience. Because the challenges we face aren't getting any more simple or any less frequent. And we've got to be able to respond with some kind of velocity.
Ooh.
You know?
Good word. Yeah.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and I feel like that each restorative justice process builds a little extra piece of that resilience. Can you describe how you kind of see that happening, or maybe an example?
Of how resilience gets built in a process?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, people have to be safe enough to come into the room. And second of all, whoever, interestingly enough, if you're doing one of the classic restorative justice, the first person that goes is the harmer. And by the way, nobody just walks into a restorative justice process. There's tons of work beforehand. What is restorative justice? What's your perception of the whole thing? How were you harmed? How did you maybe harm? How did things like that? So, And you don't hold a circle where some of those answers aren't safe. But once you do, and once somebody who could have the law thrown at them sits there and admits what's gone, part of what happens is that the law says, especially in youth cases here, if you will participate in a restorative justice circle and do everything that they come up with as a contract of repair, we'll take your record and expunge it. So and so that's exactly how some person can begin to be resilient, is that they, and then people at the table, like I had one restorative justice process where one of the community members turned to the person and said, "You have no idea how lucky you are to have 10 people from this community care about what's going on here and how this can be repaired." And the person said, I get it. I really get it. And they were 14.
Hmm.
Okay. And they didn't have a lot of that kind of support.
Yeah. When do you, I mean, if you don't have a family, you know, and a kind of a large extended family that shows up for you, who shows up?
Well, and after one of these things, who shows up are the people that were in your circle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what gets built, is each of those relationships where there's a little more trust,
mm-hmm.
where there's a little more understanding, where there's a little more familiarity.
All that.
And then, you know, that's the social capital that allows us to be creative together.
Yes.
And resilient together.
And it's a really valuable process that can happen at a community level. Like I was in Alaska, whole communities are beginning to hold these circles. And they keep doing it. And then the change of climate change comes up. They hold a circle around climate change. And if a crime in the community comes up, they address it. So it's resilient and it's enduring, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I always love to hear something that that you're working on, that my guests are working on in their own selves these days, that's giving you insight or support, you know, that's showing you sort of a next evolution in your professional work.
Ooh. Well, I have a couple of things. I have a family situation that is really helping me get out of the role of being a mom and being in the role of an equal. And I've had to give up a whole bunch of stuff, including making assumptions. That's one thing. And
that's high level.
It's high level. And it's not knowing the outcome of something is, parents kind of like to run the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you and another adult here, you have no idea what the outcome will be. And the more you back off and see this with curiosity than anything else, the more I can breathe about the whole thing.
So I hear that you're bringing insights from your professional life into this matter, and you know the lessons are going back and forth,
yes.
Which is really lovely.
And the other thing is, I am working with my book. I'm trying to do mentorships for young people, like 18 to 25, who want to do an act of peacemaking, and they would read the book. And then they pick an act of peacemaking, and then I'll mentor them through doing it along the wisdom that the women offer in the book, and then hopefully get them a certificate from the Peace Academy so they could show it to an employer, they could show it to a college, they could do things like that.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah.
It's always fun to get those real life experiences. I mean, it can be.
Yeah.
Can be really intense.
Well, COVID made it slow to get out of the chute, but here I am announcing it on your program. So,
wow, that's so awesome!
Yeah,
and you know, and what's a source of resilience for you these days, Barb? As you know, as you experience things personally and globally, where are you?
Well, two things I would say. I've been interviewing the women for my book for 30 years.
Mm.
And I realized one day that they've just rubbed off on me.
Mm.
So I have neural pathways that will come out of the chute being curious, restorative, things like that, that I didn't even have 30 years ago. That helps. But I think the other thing is I just have to remember I can't keep driving this bus. I just, and then the magic does happen. The more I get out of the driver's seat, and I'll wake up the next morning and go like, wow, how come that person called me? And it gives me faith that I don't have to be in charge.
Yeah.
Something else bigger.
Yeah, I feel like there's that co-creative relationship that finally kind of starts to hum.
Yeah.
With, you know, all the forces of the universe.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
When we've been showing up and doing our work in good faith, you know, we enter that place of, okay,
yeah.
You know, I just have to keep doing that and I can trust that I'll be used well.
And I think this actually happened with Native Americans.
Mm.
I think they had this process down, and then the court system came back and sort of colonialized that. And one of the women that I interviewed, she's not in the book, her job was Canada said, we're sorry we took that away from you, and sent this woman up to some of the native northern tribes in Canada to remember what they had done. And they'd almost forgotten. She, it was really, really interesting. But can you imagine a country saying, we're sorry? We shouldn't have done that. We respect what you do. And then watching so they could learn from what their process was.
Yeah. Boy, we need more of that.
Yes.
Right? Just that humility.
Yes.
That humility that allows for breakthroughs and learning.
Yeah. And let something bigger than one person.
Right.
Yeah. Or one colony.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being with us today, Barb. Incredible conversation. We will have to do this again.
Okay. And I love being able to address it because sometimes I get too busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It's been a gift. And thank you all for listening today. If you have a question for Barb or me, you can join the Facebook page at The Inner Game and ask anything there and listen to past show, find out where to listen to past shows there as well. So until next time, consider how you can create more peace in your own life. Be a peacemaker. And I will try to play some music, and I don't even know where it is.
Just let go. Let go, Gwen. It'll come.
Well, there's since I don't know where the music is, we'll just keep talking until someone comes to save us.
Okay.
Someone will come and release us from technological.
If I put myself in your shoes, you're doing fine.
You know, you just have to kind of let go every once in a while because there's a lot you're supposed to be responsible for.
Yeah, it's quite a board you have to manage, isn't it?
I don't even know which mouse works for it. Here we go. Maybe this will work. And thank you all for listening. The Inner Game happens every first Thursday of the month. And hopefully it will be, this is why I like to do this recorded, because the technological part of this just eludes me. Okay. Well, maybe we can have a little bit more time. We've got the mics.
Yeah, that's right.
until someone comes.
Just the control we said we wanted to drop.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that some of the most poignant things I've done are family restorative justice things, where you don't necessarily have an outcome like these rules and things like that. You just watch faces change. You watch closeness return to a family that's been torn apart by right and wrong opinions. And I wish every family, and that's what I give for wedding gifts. I tell people they can come back on their anniversary and look at what's going on in their lives now and figure out how to make those needs work collaboratively. So if they've got a baby or they've got a new job or something like that, they really get conscious about a mindful forward thing for
God, them. What a gorgeous gift.
Well, some people that want like silverware, they don't particularly like
right.
it, but it's my gift. It's my gift of choice.
Where Where's my blender?
Yeah. My Cuisinart. Yeah.
You know, is your, I'd love to just hear a quick story from your book.
Oh, from the book. Let's see. Well, I'll tell you my story from the book.
Beautiful.
So I've been interviewing 60 women for this, and I started off with a PhD dissertation and interviewed 9 of them, one of which was a woman that was setting up a camp for Bosnian refugee children. And I don't know quite how it happened, but I ended up there. So I was with 80 refugees for 2 weeks. And it changed my entire life.
Wow.
I came home and I went like, this isn't an academic exercise anymore.
Yeah.
I need to start being a peacemaker. And if I can, wake up as many peacemakers as possible.
Thank you for keeping on and doing that, Barb.
It's pretty addictive,
yeah.
I have to say.
It's
pretty
a good,
rewarding.
The good kind.
Yeah.
Awesome. See you again. We're done.
Are ancient, mountains are high.